nutrition.
Hello, I am Dave Anthony, and you are listening to The Dollop. It is an American history podcast. Each week, I read a subject from American history to my friend,
Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is about.
And his name is Gary.
It's Gareth. Gareth.
Gary. God, do you want a little hit of dude?
I'll do one bump.
People say this is funny.
Not Gary, Gareth.
Dave, okay.
Someone or something is tickling people.
Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the tickling podcast.
Okay.
You are Queen Fakey of Made Up Town.
All hail Queen Shit of Liesville.
A bunch of religious virgins go to mingle.
And do what?
Pray.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
Okay, dates?
Yeah.
What do you got, girl?
All right, girl. I'll be at Loaded in Los Angeles February 8th at 9 p.m. with Sam Tripoli for a great show. It's $5.
What happens at Loaded? Why is it called Loaded?
I think that's the place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I'll be at the 12th. I'll be with Dan Levy at Flappers. Uh-huh. I'll be at Harvell's in Long Beach on Valentine's Day with Samuel Tripoli. And then the 17th, I will be at Flappers. And I'll be posting all of those shows. You can pay attention to my Twitter or my Facebook.
Flap, flap, flap. Yeah, for me, you can go to DaveAnthonyComedy.com. And all of this, my whole calendar is on there. February 7th, I'll be at the Improv with Jen Kirkman. February 9th, live TOEFOP at Meltdown here in Los Angeles with Will Anderson, Jen Kirkman, you, Matt Kirshen, a Scottish guy. What's a Scottish guy's name?
I don't remember.
I haven't met him. February 12th, set list at Bar Lubitsch. Lubitsch, is that it?
Lubitsch, yep.
And then the big show Monday, February 16th at the Steve Allen Theater. Will Anderson and I will be running our one-man shows for Melbourne. And that you can get tickets at go to the Steve Allen website. And then also on March 9th, I will be doing my one-man show at the UCB at Sunset. I'll be running that alone. That one will be a full hour. That's going to be some shit right
actually
there.
Then I got one more. On March 6th and 7th, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, my home state, doing stand-up featuring for Steve Byrne at Comedy on State Street, which I'm super excited about.
Well.
March 6th and 7th.
Hero returns home, huh?
Yes, the hero, exactly. That's I'm sure that's hero what the headlines will read.
Returns home.
Yeah. Where are we going? Where are we going, David?
Ohio.
All
1949.
Right. Ooh, tasty.
Michael Larson was born in the small town of Lebanon, Ohio. He was one of four brothers. Although he was generally regarded as creative and intelligent, he preferred shady enterprises over actual employment.
That's a good start.
When he was in middle school, he smuggled candy bars into class and sold them for profit. Okay, I gotta say, when I was in middle school,
I
used
to
go to Chinatown and I would buy firecrackers and sell them at school. So
yeah,
that's just capitalism.
Listen, if this is a story about a Midwest kid who sells candy for more money than he paid, it might be me.
But this was the beginning of his scrupulous series of ventures. One of his later schemes involved opening a checking account with a bank that was offering a promotional $500 to each new customer. Larson would withdraw the cash as soon as possible, close the account, then repeat the process over and over under different names. Okay, that's the bank's fault.
That is on the bank.
Why are you offering $500 for a new fucking
on
account?
The bank.
That's the stupidest bank I've ever heard of.
$500 to open an account.
Like an account.
Yeah.
Just a fucking account.
Hey, here's a dollar. I want to open an account.
Here's $500.
Hey, I made $499.
Thanks for coming to Stupid Bank.
Oh man, the bank of dumb's going out of business.
Another scheme was when Larson created a fake business under a family member's name, hired himself as an employee, then laid himself off to collect unemployment.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
That's great.
By 1983, Michael Larson had been married and divorced twice and was living with his girlfriend, Teresa Dinwiddie.
Of the Dinwiddies?
Such a bad name.
Dinwiddie.
Dinwiddie.
Dinwiddie?
Din. D-I-N.
Oh, so it even is closer to being
closer,
stupid.
Closer to dim.
Yeah.
As close to dimwitty as you can get.
As you can get without calling it
actually
dimwitty.
Being. They had three children. His girlfriend said Larson thought he was smarter than everyone else. During the summers, he operated a Mr. Softy ice cream truck.
Oh, boy.
And during non-ice cream truck months, he scoured through magazines looking for money-making schemes. He also sometimes worked as an air conditioning repairman. Okay. I love that a guy like that thinks he's smarter than everyone else. But this is exactly what guys who want to get rich quick end up doing.
Yeah.
They end up driving a Softy
truck. A Mr. Softy?
Scamming. Larson spent hours a day with his console television scanning the channels for lucrative opportunities.
And that's because that's where a lot of the big, big money makers pop up on, is an 800 number.
One day he realized that he could double his information intake by setting up a second TV besides the first.
That's really true. You're able, I don't know if people know that.
But you can, yeah, you can
you
watch
could TV. Easily split your focus if you just double the TVs.
Soon he added a third.
Okay, this guy must be the smartest man on earth.
Later he added a row of smaller televisions on top of the three consoles. And then another row of TVs was later stacked on top of that.
Okay.
Now he could watch 12 channels at once.
Could he?
No.
No, he couldn't.
No, but he was probably just waiting for the commercials to come on.
So he just got
it. But the way TV works, the commercials always come on at the same time for everything.
It just sounds like a crazy nightmare room. It sounds like the newsroom, basically.
Did you ever see that episode of Taxi where Lodka gets all the TVs?
No.
It's that one.
I can imagine.
So he has a wall of TVs. It's great. His wall of TVs continued to expand. It moved into other rooms in the house. The entire home was filled with infomercials, news programs, game shows, and advertisements for money-making schemes. Larson watched them in a trance-like state, sometimes sitting there all night long.
Just wall-to-wall looking for infomercials or...
Fuck. Well, I mean, look, if you're, I would say this is a sign of depression because he drives a Mr. Softy truck.
Well, I mean, imagine being able to follow your Mr. Softy man home and be like, oh, you're out of your tits.
Holy shit, you shouldn't be driving a truck that feeds kids.
Oh, okay.
Dinwiddie would later say her boyfriend had a constant yearning for knowledge.
Dinwiddie would also later say she was wrong about every quote.
But when visitors asked about the giant, massive television, she found it easier to just tell them that Larson was crazy.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah.
What's with all the TVs in your house?
Oh, he's just nuts.
He's insane.
He's out of his mind.
I love him, but he's fucking crazy.
He's crazy.
Then one day, in November of 1983, Peter Tamarkin's appeared on one of his televisions. Tamarkin was the host of a new game show called Press Your Luck, which was giving away more money than any other game shows at the time.
Oh, boy.
Do you know what this is now?
I don't know what Press Your Luck is, but I definitely think he's about to press his luck.
Larson was most interested in the board. It was an electronic array of prize boxes, which operated by lighting up squares in a rapid and random fashion until the player pressed a big red button to stop the action. So it was like, it's right. Like a big square, and then just random lights come on the
you
board,
hit your button,
and whenever you hit it, whatever one it's on there. It would stop.
And there's like a prize there.
There's prizes, or there's thing called whammies, or
oh whammies.
Money.
Okay, right.
Yeah, whammies. This is the
that's
whammy
where I know where
whammies.
Right. Okay.
The player's randomly selected box might contain a vacation, a prize, cash rewards, and or extra spins. But with each spin, there was a 1 in 6 chance of hitting a whammy, which would cause an animated character to appear on the screen and take all of the player's winnings.
Okay.
The player had been whammied.
Okay. Oh, fuck.
Larson invested in a video cassette recorder and began taping episodes of Press Your Luck.
Oh, boy.
After weeks of studying the show, Larson realized that the bouncing prize selector did not actually move randomly. It always followed one of 5 sequences.
Oh, shit.
This information was only slightly useful because of the rapidly shuffling positions of the prizes and penalties. So the prizes are moving too. So everything's
right.
Changing. But he wasn't done. His analysis led to another discovery. Of the 18 squares on the big board, there were 2 that never had whammies. Number 4 and number 8.
Shit. You imagine being like the producer of Press Your Luck, thinking that nobody will ever have 30 TVs just devoted to fucking finding out the sequence of the whammies.
This meant all a player had to do was avoid whammies, and
it's a great sentence already.
And so he would have to memorize five almost never-ending series of numbers and develop superhuman reflexes.
So he's a smart... He's a guy who's able to use his brain to... Like, he's able to calculate and use his brain for good, but instead, he's just sitting at home figuring out the whammy sequence.
Well, he's one of these guys that wants to get rich quick, and so he's spending all his time looking for a get-rich-quick thing. But all the time he spends looking for a get-rich-quick scheme, if he had just gotten a regular job, he would have probably made more money.
Right. He's penny-wise, dollar-foolish.
That's how these guys always work.
Right, right.
Larson was thrilled and began fine-tuning his timing using his VCR's pause key as a surrogate big red button.
Oh, my God.
6 months later, in May 1984, Michael Larson was in Hollywood being interviewed during the Press Your Luck auditions. He pulled out all the emotional tricks for his story. He explained that he was an unemployed ice cream truck driver. He said he had borrowed the bus money to get to Hollywood from Ohio because he loved Press Your Luck. He had stopped at a thrift store down the street to buy a 65-cent dress shirt. And he was unable to afford a gift for his six-year-old daughter's upcoming birthday.
You could just see the producers going, like, looking at each other like, yeah, we've got a fucking winner.
Executive producer Bill Carruthers said of Larson's audition, he really impressed us. He had charisma.
Mm-hmm. Sure he did.
But the contestant coordinator was uneasy about Larson, although he couldn't articulate why. It was just a feeling. The executive producer overruled him.
Yeah.
Taping occurred the following Saturday. Returning champion Ed Long sat on Larson's right, and contestant Janie Littris sat on his left. Larson was sitting at the center podium on the stage, looking rather unremarkable in his thrift store shirt and slicked back graying hair. Host Peter Tamarkin made the usual game showy chit-chat with each contestant, and he asked Michael about his ice cream truck. What kind of... You've kind of OD'd on ice cream, right? He asked Larson, who agreed. Well, hopefully you won't OD on money, Michael, he said. Larson earned three spins on the big board in the first question round, giving him three opportunities to test the skills he had practiced over and over for the past 6 months. The board began its pseudo-random maneuvers. Come on, big bucks, Larson chanted.
Yeah. Which just was full of shit knowing what's up.
Yeah, which was the customary saying for players when they were going up against the big board.
Okay.
That or no whammies.
Yeah,
No whammies. Stop, he shouted and slapped the button with both hands. The selector was stopped on a whammy in slot number 17. Larson shook his head and forced an embarrassed smile. But what he was actually doing was testing out the timing of the board. Now he knew exactly how the board was timed with respect to the button.
Right, because it's following one of the sequences, so he's just trying to nail which sequence
it is.
And
he knows how when he presses it, how long it'll take to stop. He's got
Okay.
With his second and third spins, Larson found his stride. He stopped looking like a usual contestant yelling no whammies and remained silent as he concentrated on the light bouncing around the big board. Both times, he successfully landed on space number 4, and he ended the first half of the game with $2,500.
Okay.
In the second half of the game, which was much more lucrative, Larson managed to get 7 spins to use on the big board.
Oh, shit.
Since he was in last place, he was the first to spin. He positioned his hands over the button with interlocked fingers. Tamarkin was going in his usual banter when Larson interrupted him by shouting, I'm ready, I'm ready!
He can't fucking deal with it.
He can't. He's in his zone. Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
So let me ask you about the ice cream that's in the Mr.
Go, you son of a bitch!
I'm sorry?
Start the board!
All right, let's start the board.
Tamarkin indulged him, and the light on the big board began bouncing. Again, Larson was silent as he stared at the board. Fellow contestant Ed Long would later say of Larson during these moments that, quote, he went into a trance. And the winning had begun. Larson's demeanor altered between intense concentration and jubilation. The strategy worked even better than he had thought it would due to the large number of free spin bonuses that appeared in the safe slots. So he's getting free.
Oh, jeez. So he's just racking it up.
He's racking up free spins, and he just keeps going and going and going. Tamarkin became increasingly astonished each time Larson made the spin again gesture. people just didn't keep going because hitting a whammy was inevitable. $30,000 was considered an extraordinary payoff for one day on any game show at the time, and the likelihood of missing whammies far more than a dozen for more than a dozen spins was considered almost impossible. By his 13th spin, Larson had $32,351. Wow. He was now nervously giggling.
Think of all the TVs I can buy.
By his 21st spin, he had $47,601 and was visibly anxious. He continued on.
Holy shit.
In the press luck control booth, there was total silence. The show's producers began to realize that Larson was consistently winning on the same two spaces. Both operators called Michael Brockman, CBS's head of daytime television programming. Quote, something was very wrong, Brockman said in a TV Guide interview. Here was this guy from nowhere, and he was hitting the bonus box every time. It was bedlam, I can tell you. Bedlam. That's not bedlam.
No, but it is. It is when you're in the game, the Press Your Luck game show production room.
Producers asked if they could stop the show, but Larson did not appear to be breaking any rules, so they were forced to allow the episode to play out. Back on the stage, Ed and Janie clapped incredulously on either side of Larson as they sat waiting forever for their turns. Janie let slip a little snort of disgust after Larson's 26th successful spin.
26th? That's just...
And Larson continued on. Tamarkin covered his face with his hands in disbelief as Larson risked almost $75,000 on his 32nd spin.
Holy shit.
Like, no one goes past $30,000 and he's at 75.
And he's going to risk it all.
He's risking it all every fucking time.
Is that the idea? You double it at like your...
No, you get money.
Prizes and stuff.
Yeah, whatever it lands on, like $5,000, you get that. But if you hit a whammy, it's over, and you always hit a whammy.
So he's at 75, and if he hits a whammy, it's over.
Yeah, he loses everything.
So he's still gleaming the cube.
Now Larson's zen-like concentration was starting to falter. He paused to set his head on the podium and let out a whimper of exhaustion. The audience was quiet and subdued.
Because they wanted to go home at some point.
Ordinarily, a live studio audience would be counted on to holler and clap their hands together. The studio audience was clearly worried that he'd hit a whammy and lose all his money, while the producers were in the control booth worried that he wouldn't. The show was now beyond its 30-minute format.
So this is and this is live?
Yeah. Well, they're taping it.
Yeah.
It's not live on TV, but they're taping it.
They're trying
and they can't cut it down. It's a game show.
You can't have a two-parter Press Your Luck.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Larson motioned to continue. You're going again? Asked Tamarkin as Larson lauded. Gasps and murmurs came from the audience. They cautiously applauded. Janie and Ed clapped in stunned silence. Michael's going again, Tamarkin announced incredulously. We've never had anything like this before. The scoreboard on Larson's podium read 90,351,
wow,
an amount unheard of in the history of Press Your Luck. In fact, this total was far greater than any person had ever earned in one sitting on any television game show. On his 40th spin, Larson's scoreboard
on
got...
On his 40th?
Yeah.
Fucking A. Larson's, I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, this is way over 30 minutes.
Yes, it's, way over.
Yeah, you're not going under a minute a spin.
On his 40th spin, Larson's scoreboard got rid of his dollar sign to make room for another digit. He had surpassed 100,000.
What the fuck?
Larson slumped and passed his remaining spins to the bewildered Ed Long.
Wait.
So he hit 100 grand. He's like, that's it.
He's done.
And then you can give your spins to the next person.
Yeah, okay.
Ed took one turn and hit a whammy.
All day for this?
Larson stood in sort of a daze as Ed and Janie took their turns on the board. But they were like barn animals compared to Larson.
Yeah.
Although Janie was clearly not liking what Larson had done. She passed her three spins to him. So, according to the game rules, he has to use them. If you get past spins, you have no choice.
Oh, fuck. All right.
Larson was visibly pissed.
Oh, shit.
But what a fucking twat. I'm sorry. The guy's 100 grand. Why are you trying to fuck him?
She's fucking shit. Well, because, you know, they're competing.
Bullshit. That's fucking lame.
It is lame, but it's also, look, if he's the fucking Mac Daddy, let's go.
Chaney's an asshole. I didn't want them, Larson said nervously.
I'll give you 50 grand to not give me them.
As the light began bouncing around the big board, but he immediately punched the big red button and landed on 4,000 in slot number 4.
Oh, my God.
Chaney let out a squeal.
Oh, Jesus.
The board started again. After a much longer than usual delay, Larson hit the button again, landing safely in slot number 8. He had just one mandatory spin remaining. The board started flashing, and Larson yelled out a sigh. Stop! He shouted as he slapped the button, but he had pressed it a fraction of a second too soon.
No.
He didn't hit slot number 8 or slot number 4. He hit number 17.
A whammy.
It was the same slot where he'd hit a whammy on his first spin. But this time, there was no whammy. The slot contained a trip to the Bahamas.
Oh, my God.
It was over. Larson had won. He gave Ed an awkward embrace.
Hey, man. Better luck next time.
I gave Chaney a firm handshake.
Fucking bitch.
You fucking asshole. Larson had won $110,237 in cash and prizes, including 2 tropical vacations and a sailboat.
A sailboat!
This was more than triple the previous record of winnings on a single episode of a game show. A clearly confused Tamarkin asked Larson, why did you keep going? Well, 2 things, Larson replied. 1, it felt right.
Okay.
So, all right.
Yeah.
And 2, I had 7 spins, and if I passed them, somebody could have done what I did. No.
No, they couldn't have.
That's total bullshit. What are you going to do with the money, Michael? Invest in houses. Larson was not allowed to return as champion because he had surpassed CBS's 25K in winnings. After CBS executives held a meeting where they dissected the episode frame by frame, even though they tried desperately, they could find no evidence of wrongdoing or rule breaking. So after weeks, they grudgingly mailed Larson his check.
Holy shit.
Some executives at CBS didn't want the overextended episode to be released to the public at all, but it was ultimately decided to air it in June as a weirdly edited 2-parter.
They did a cliffhanger of a game show.
But they insisted that the episode never be seen again. Press Your Luck added more sequences to the big board to prevent future contestants from doing what Larson did. So the reason they aired it is because it just came down to money. Like, they lost $110,000, but also you then have to shoot 2 new episodes, and that costs another whatever.
Yeah, right. So they don't want to lose. Fuck it, we'll air it more.
Neighbors were shocked to learn of crazy Michael Larson's accomplishment. True to his word, he bought his daughter expensive birthday gifts and invested some of his spoils in real estate. But Larson still loved a get-rich-quick scheme.
Uh-oh.
He ended up dumping a bunch of money into a Ponzi scheme.
Ah.
That ended his appetite for real estate. Larson became an assistant manager at a local Walmart store in Ohio. He also ran promotions and marketing for marketing company Group Dynamics Downline out of his Lebanon home. According to his family, Larson's victory on Press Your Luck just increased his desire to get rich quick. That's what happens, right?
Yeah, it's no, like gambling. It's Vegas. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
And Larson came up with another plan. He went into his bank and asked to withdraw his entire account balance. But he wanted the amount all in $1 bills.
Okay.
The bank went along and gave him a big old lump of ones. Larson then went to another bank to trade even more of his cash for singles. Over a 2-week period, he converted close to $100,000 into $1 bills.
I mean, I can't wait.
The reason Larson wanted $1 bills was because of a contest put on by a local radio station. Each day, a disc jockey would read a serial number aloud on the air.
Oh, shit.
And if any listener was able to produce the matching dollar bill, they would win $30,000. Larson figured that $100,000 bills
nightmare
was 100,000 chances to win the prize.
What?
Which gave him a huge statistical advantage.
Well, this is a really... it's hard. This is tough. This
do you
is
see,
tough.
Do you see any logistical problems?
Yeah, I see tremendous logistical problems, but I also see his argument a little bit. I mean, can you... What a nightmare.
Even if his genius plan didn't work out, he could just redeposit the money. He figured he had nothing to lose. The good times had begun. The radio station DJ would read the serial number, then Larson and Teresa would spend the entire day looking through piles of cash, trying to find a match.
Can you imagine being, like, involved with him and being like, okay, let's just look at serial numbers all day.
They only stopped to eat, bathe, and go to the bathroom. It was like he had created his own little sweatshop. It didn't take them long to realize that it was impossible for two people to examine that much money in the amount of time given. I see a problem now. I mean, it seemed like a great idea.
I got to hire more people.
So Larson redeposited a portion of it, but he kept quite a bit of money to continue his genius venture. After a few weeks, Larson's obsession over the contest began to put quite a bit of strain on his relationship with Teresa. After a few weeks. So he's been doing this for weeks.
But what about that?
I don't know what lady doesn't love this.
What, did she want to eat or go out or something?
Jesus Christ. The cash was stashed in kitchen drawers, up the stairs, and on bedroom floors.
Oh, my God.
They kept the bills in burlap sacks, grocery bags, and unkept stacks. Ugh. And though Teresa would scream and shout, Larson would not take the cash back to the bank.
Ones.
Ugh. One evening, Larson and Teresa accepted an invitation to attend a Christmas party. When they returned home at 1 a.m., they found the back door of the house had been smashed in.
Oh, dear.
Whoever broke in made away with about $50,000.
Oh, fuck.
Larson immediately accused Teresa of being an accessory to the burglary. She denied involvement, and police found no evidence of her guilt, but Larson was never convinced. Larson would stand by the bed and stare at her while she slept.
Okay. Nothing abnormal there. Nothing strange there.
And Teresa began to fear for her safety.
Why?
I don't know.
Because he would just stare at her all night? And he thought that she took $50,000 from his radio station contest.
He doesn't even get in bed to do it. He just stands there.
No. Yeah. Well, you might fall asleep.
No, you go ahead and keep sleeping.
Keep sleeping, bitch.
One day while Larson was away, she took $5,000 that he had hidden in a dresser drawer and took off with the kids. She called him from a hotel and told him to move out of her house. His only response was, quote, I want my money back. Ugh. He packed his belongings and departed, leaving one wall of the room stained and peeling from the heat of his once huge tower of televisions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that must have made quite a fucking mark in the 80s.
Yeah. Larson called the producers of Press Your Luck, challenging them to hold the Tournament of Champions to see if he could break the bank again.
Oh, that's sad. That's really sad. That's really sad when your whole plan has it's just amounted to a Ponzi scheme gone wrong, and you were counting serial numbers with now your estranged wife who took your kids, and you called the game show to be like, let's go again. They're like,
come on, fuckers.
Yeah, I challenge you.
The producers declined.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how quick did they say go fuck yourself?
Hey, cheater, that sounds great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we'd love to have you come back and try to win six figures off our show, you fuck.
Police never found the thieves. In 1994, about 10 years after his Press Your Luck appearance, Larson was invited to be a guest on ABC's Good Morning America to discuss the movie Quiz Show. Larson reminisced about his game show exploits and expressed regret that he was never able to play on Jeopardy because he explained, I think I figured out some angles on that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because a guy did. It just happened recently.
What, figured out an angle on Jeopardy?
Yeah, and everyone was really pissed.
What is his angle?
He was going straight for the...
I saw that one. Yeah, the Asian dude who would just pick the biggest ones. But still...
All the Jeopardy watchers were furious.
But still, as I was a little bit, because I do watch Jeopardy.
Seriously,
but,
you were mad about it?
Because you spend so long watching... Like, part of what's fun about Jeopardy when you watch it is that you're getting sort of acclimated to what the category is. Uh-huh. So it's like, you know, if it starts small. So you're sort of like, okay, I got that. I get that. And
I see
now
what
your
it is
brain
now.
Is sort of working towards it. This dude would just jump in whole hog and just be like $2,000 right away. And you'd be like, well, it's a fucking impossible one. but I will say this, that dude, he knew shit.
Yeah.
So Larson's.
Well, Larson might have known shit.
He knew serial numbers on dollar bills.
Fair.
I mean, who knows what knowledge you accrue from, like, watching 12 TVs at the same time for 4 years. But I would guess that he would not... It wasn't just the Jeopardy system.
No, probably not. Around that same time, he was also interviewed by TV Guide magazine, which is a great magazine, by the way.
They have some of the most in-depth interviews.
Oh, my God. And they just get so into the guide.
Oh, they really ask the hard-hitting questions.
What's going on with Hawaii Five-0
at 10 p.m.? What's your favorite show at 8 p.m. Thursdays?
When asked
President
about,
Obama.
When asked about the whereabouts of his Press Your Luck winnings, he replied, "It didn't work out. We had a cash flow problem, and I lost everything." We had a cash flow problem.
That is really putting a shine on it.
Larson then got involved in an illegal scheme. In March of 1995, Larson fled from Ohio with agents from the SEC, IRS, and FBI after him. He was implicated as one of the masterminds behind a cash flow solution called Pleasure Time Incorporated. It was a pyramid scheme selling shares in a fraudulent American Indian lottery, which had taken 20,000 investors for $3 million.
Wow, fuck.
The Pleasure Time scam was historic in that it was the first time the SEC pursued a case where the bulk of the fraud took place in cyberspace.
Oh, wow.
So he's, again, ahead of the fucking curve.
Yeah.
He is keeping an eye on shit. He's checking out what to do.
A lot of fucking money.
Yeah. Michael Larson was a fugitive from justice for 4 years until 1999 when he turned up in Apopka, Florida. He had succumbed to throat cancer. CBS suppressed the video for 19 years because both the network and the Carruthers considered the incident to be one of their biggest embarrassments. When USA Network and later GSN bought the rights to rerun Press Your Luck, CBS and the Carruthers insisted that the Larson episode must not be aired. On March 16, 2003, GSN was allowed to air the episode, including a previously edited out portions, as part of a two-hour documentary called Big Bucks, The Press Your Luck Scandal.
Wow.
Hosted and narrated by Press Your Luck host Peter Tamarkin. The documentary was produced and aired on GSN and broke all previous viewership records for the network. Michael Larson held the record for the most game show winnings in a single day until 2006, when it was broken by Vicky Ann Trobak-Sadowski on The Price is Right. Larson's has become a strange kind of folk hero to some. Others regard him as a cheap huckster or a likable but occasionally creepy crackpot. His shenanigans on Press Your Luck are often described as a scam, scandal, or a cheat, but even the CBS executives ultimately admitted that he had not broken a rule. In the end, his impressive performance on Press Your Luck may be one of the only honest day's work that Michael Larson ever did. At one point, Bill Murray was attached to a star in a movie about Michael Larson, but the film fell apart.
Fuck. That's amazing.
Isn't it?
What do you think he is?
Sad. I mean, he's obviously very smart, but if you're that smart...
Use it for more.
Yeah, you could choose
it for more.
Yeah, you could choose another thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I like this guy. I like where his head's at. That's amazing. God, I got to see that. Have you seen it?
No, I've never seen it. I'd heard about it, but I'd never seen it. I thought you would know that one.
No.
No.
Why, like, because it's on TV?
All right.
Wow.
Congrats, Mr. Larson.
Yeah, my hero.